Your sex life is a continuity nightmare.
Tell me about it.
Well, you make it sound like they finish before they start.
No, we have someone watching. We have someone watching us at all times to make sure we take up where we left off.
Weren't you holding something in that previous time?
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the worst things in life. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the world's worst something. Queen sang, "We are the champions, my friends, and we'll keep on fighting to the end," which frankly sounds like a lot of effort. They also sang, "We are the champions, no time for losers," which I think makes this podcast the direct opposite of Queen. Then again, the lyric, "We're not really the champions, but we've got lots of time for losers," doesn't scan so well. And jamming alongside me this week, very much the curly, mopped, indignant Brian May to my deceased homosexual Freddie Mercury. It's Ben Vanderveld.
Hello. Yes.
Speaking to you from beyond the grave.
You are. I'm not. Do you think Brian May's indignant?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, about Badgers, about space, about Queen's legacy post-Freddie's death. Have you heard about the Queen movie that they've been trying to make for ages?
Where they were going to have Sacha Baron Cohen as Freddie Mercury.
And then Ben Whishaw, I think, has been named. But basically, I think the reason Sacha Baron Cohen pulled out is because he said Freddie dies halfway through the film, and then they wanted to talk about what a great, like, the film was going to be, how great it was that Queen continued after Freddie's death.
It's not like a film about that fucking musical that's trumped all over their legacy. Brian, and who's going to play Brian May? Like, Anita Dobson?
You've got the hair for it.
Get on. I mean, this is me playing young Brian May.
Yeah, you're half May at the moment. You're semi-May.
Oh, that's really unpleasant. Also, if I'm going to be Brian May, then I should really have made our podcasting microphone out of bits of old washing machines.
It's true.
Which is what we did with this guitar.
Yeah. Don't let them see what we're doing. Ben's cranking a computer beside us.
Yeah, this is very much a Heath Robinson-style podcast. Anyway, enough of this Queen nonsense. I must introduce our guest.
Beg your pardon. So,
Barry, after 23 episodes...
I'll let you know it's fairy nonsense.
You're not in a pantomime.
Oh, yes, yes I am.
Yeah, well done. So, our guest is a hugely multi-talented individual. She is a BAFTA-nominated screenwriter, a BAFTA Rowcliffe alumni, stand-up author, actress, and one-third of acclaimed sketch trio Jigsaw. It is the wonderful Natlet Seymour.
Hello. I was saying really quiet until you said my name, because I began in radio, and I was always told that, like, until you're introduced, you don't say anything. So I was just, like, stifling my giggles, because apparently it confuses the listener.
I think the listeners are constantly confused.
I like the fact that you had some sort of radio matron in your mind that is going, no, Natalie.
Stop. Don't jump in with people that you think might play a good Brian May. None of your business.
Who would you play have as Brian May if you were casting that film?
If I'm going purely on hair, I think I'd go for the comedian Matthew Heighton.
Oh, Heighton would be great.
Yeah,
he's got that good sort of northern face that Brian May's got as well. Is Brian May a northerner? Feels like he's a northerner.
Yeah, I know
he's
what you
mean. He's quite posh though, isn't he?
They do lose it. When they get posh, they will fling that accent aside.
Yeah.
They will.
I like that this podcast has basically turned into three people muse about where Brian May is from.
The mad thing with Brian May, the older he gets, the more he looks like Sir Isaac Newton.
He's got a periwig.
His head. Yes. Yeah. So now we do ask every single guest on this podcast what they are worst in the world at. What are you terrible at?
I'm so bad at this. I'm a terrible, terrible singer. Like, awful. And like, when I was younger...
You could be the Brian May in the film, then.
Ooh, too soon, Barry. And when I was at school, I was really sad, because I think, like, when you're school kids, you're kind of fed the idea that, like, going to be a singer, or you're going to be, like, a netballer, and that's how you become famous, and, like, that was the plan.
Those famous netballers.
The singing netball team.
Yes.
Which is, I'm sure that's a Dennis Potter this. what are you bad at singing? Is it rhythm or tone or everything?
The notes are the worst. Like in my head, it's sort of roughly the right notes, but what comes out is like
Eric Morgan thing. All the right notes, but not necessarily in the right
order. Exactly, exactly. And like, and if people are like, oh, I don't know that song, sing it to me. I'll sing it, and they're like, yeah, I mean, you should have spoken the lyrics. That's all I'm getting. And I went for an advert casting where they wanted a bad singer years and years ago. And I went in and I just sang. And they were like, that is astonishing. Because they were like, because you know what we get is people come in and they over-egg it. They just go too bad. And like, what you're doing is beautiful because it's just flat. And it's just dancing around the belt. And I was like, thank you.
That whole thing they say about like good singers find it hard to sing badly.
Yes, exactly. But bad singers just bloody turn up, still with toothpaste on their chin and just have a bit of a sing. So I got the advert and I turned up on the day, and halfway through the day, it was a lovely advert. Halfway through the day, they were like, do you know, I'm going to try something. Can you just try singing it really well? No. Just give us a middle C. No. I don't know what that is. I can't help you. Like, I didn't feel at all bad. Like, I thought they might call my agent. My agent would be like, well, you wanted a bad singer.
I have that thing where you try to get people to recognise a song where I only know a bit of the song. So I know, you know, Empire State of Mind.
Yeah.
New York, made of, inspire you, New York.
I've got like a really annoying thing where
we're gonna have to pay Alicia Keys a shed load of money now for that.
God,
she is like just money for mangling it. Yeah. I can sing certain songs really well, and so it makes me overconfident. And then I'll sort of, I'll go for one, like, right, best example I think of, Penny Lane. You'd have thought Penny Lane is a really easy song to sing because it's a nice, jaunty Beatles number. It's an absolute pain in the arse.
Do you know what I can sing, actually, is because my voice is quite deep as well, I can sing along perfectly to Gary Barlow and also to quite a few Oasis songs, but nothing else. But they just sort of have a slightly droning quality to them. But yeah, I went to go see a play the other day, and at the end everyone started singing Never Forget. They started it on stage. People in the audience just didn't rebel and be like,
Should we go for a standing ovation? I have got a very different idea. We've got to talk about what this week's subject is, and I'm really excited to talk about it. It's just going to be quite personal. It's the world's worst lodgings.
True, yeah. Another guest basically picking our subject for us, which is exciting. I think there's going to be quite a lot of personal stories from Nat, but we're going to come to them after we go to Ben. First of all, Ben, what are your discoveries?
So, there's going to be a fair amount of personal stories from me as well.
Good.
But my two favourite discoveries of the two, when I thought of lodgings, I thought of the opposite end of Hollywood, like Hollywood Mansions. Who is the worst Hollywood star to live with? And it's a toss-up between Megan Fox and Kirstie Alley. They have got some beautiful-looking mansions from the outside. Megan Fox has got her own little menagerie where she has squirrels and a pig called Piggy Smalls, who lives with her.
I'm not seeing a downside. I don't understand.
Yeah. Does she have a fox called Megan? That's what I want to know.
Not to my knowledge, but to my knowledge, the squirrel and the pig, they just treat the mansion like their own sandbox.
Wow.
Bin. Kirstie Alley's is even worse. She has spent over $40,000 on dogs, fine, and lemurs.
Whoa. Ooh. Amazing.
Again, I'm partial to a lemur.
I like a lemur, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we are not the audience
for this. But are they Scientology lemurs? Because she is a notorious Scientologist.
Bet they are.
Probably, because you know the way that Scientologists...
That's how they hook
people.
You with Q. <That's
it. laughs> No, because they use the black and white spinning disc, so they get the lemur and rotate it, and then you're hooked in.
I'm very sympathetic to this, because I got a kitten in February last year, and so lovely. And I went a bit OTT, and I decided that the whole flat, despite the fact three people live in the flat, was now just her domain. And so it just became full of cat toys. There was cat litter everywhere. If she wanted to climb up on the bookcase, oh, what a clever little girl. And I made our whole flat awful, just awful. And there was a small rebellion, and she went to go and live with my parents, who had two cats. And you're right, it's that bridge from two pets to three pets, where you're suddenly like, you look insane.
Yeah. You had kittens for about a week, didn't you?
Oh, we had. No. So I had a cat as a kid, and we got on very well.
Yeah, and me then too. I wasn't the sole person in charge of that cat. And I think that was what I hadn't factored in.
The responsibility level, yeah.
That did help. Well, we had the most middle-class cat in the world because she enjoyed nothing better than a bit of smoked salmon and roasted coconuts. But we got on fine. I went away to university, came back, and I was now allergic to the cat, which is very disappointing. Yeah. And then, but my missus had never owned pets, so we got two beautiful little kittens, and we called them Bob and Edmund, which is the best name for a girl and a boy kitten.
Yes.
And
apart from Margot von Katten.
That's mine. Well, also, if we're talking cat names, Frank Skinner and Dave Baddiel absolutely smashed out of the park because their cat was called Chairman Meow. It's a massive winner.
Yeah, that's pretty good as well. Yeah.
But in our wee little flat, these two tiny little kittens were like a piece of radioactive material, and they
so stinky, aren't they?
They hospitalised me. I was that allergic to them.
Oh,
I woke up this one morning. Couldn't work up this morning. This is the worst blue song ever. Blocked nose, constricted airwaves, and like the ambulance had to be called out and stop me on a nebulizer, and it was like a really disappointing episode of Casually because I was in the back of a car. And then the most heartbreaking thing is we had to get rid of them, and they got sent to Bognor Regis. Sorry, that makes it sound like there was a young facility there. But like someone that I found on Facebook took them, and I got told that they got one of them. I think they got renamed something like Sparkle and Stardust.
Oh, God. Just...
So long as they're well looked after, they don't give a shit what they're called.
No, of course not.
No one calls Margot Margot. They call her Squeak at my parents' house. I'm from quite working class roots. I obviously have changed myself a little, but yeah.
He's suggesting that working class people only speak in like sounds.
Yeah, very small.
Onomatopoeia. A series of grunts and whistles.
Oh, my words are getting longer and longer as I've been getting louder. Oh God! Well, our cat, when she was a kitten, she shit herself once, and it went all down her back legs. And because she's got long fur, it sort of hardened into trousers. So she wore them around in the middle of the night, and then she didn't know what to do. And so my poor boyfriend was sleeping, and she crawled up his chest, and she just sat her pooey little nethers under his chin and touched her nose to his. And I woke up to him going,
dungarees. Strong.
Yes,
thank
yes.
you.
Thank you. I wish I'd thought about that in the morning. So I was like, oh, my precious, let me rinse your bottom. Hang on,
no,
cat.
Get
I'll
to the
you.
Cat first.
That's so much better. I was just thinking Little Miss Poo Trousers, which is from the X-rated Beatrix Potter.
Good. So, yeah, living with pets can be tricky.
Yeah, living with pets can be very, very tricky. Another thing that I looked at was bands, because bands, when they're on tour, have some really bad living conditions.
Yeah,
like the Beatles, when they were living in Hamburg, lived in some terrifically bad digs in the Reeper Barn. And my favourite story of them is that they had a broken toilet, which was stinking the whole room out. And so John Lennon's response to this was to take the toilet seat, stick it over his head, and stand on the balcony urinating on passing nuns who were going to mass in the morning.
I really need to go, but I need some nuns first.
They're the most absorbent of the women.
Well, it's
there
the wimple.
Yeah. It is the wimple. They have no idea there's any wee anyway. It's just splashing off the top of them. God, have you lived in any bad Edinburgh lodgings?
Well, probably the both the best and the worst when in 2005.
At the turn of the century. It was a very different time.
Blair was in power, Bowie was alive, Donald Trump was a host on TV.
Halcyon days.
Yeah. Britannia.
I lived in a flat with about 20 other people. Jeez. I was basically squatting in the living room. And it was
there weren't any nuns.
They called me Little Miss Poo Trousers. And it was I was living with the cast of Top Gun the Musical.
What? Who'd have thought the cast would be so big?
And it was
the most homoerotic thing you could possibly think of.
I'm so jealous.
It was an astonishing time, and I'll be honest, that was the year that I tried hallucinogenic drugs for the first time in Edinburgh, and I'll level with you guys. If you're dropping acid and then the cast of Top Gun the Musical come home in full flight suits, with sunglasses, aviators, blonde hair, and then pretend to be part of the Luftwaffe. That is not a fun
to a
place.
Young Jewish man.
Yeah, oh, that's not a fun place to be.
Trousers.
Yeah. So that was a real struggle.
That's astonishing.
And we spent a lot of time in the shared back garden there. And it was lovely because we did. There was one morning. Me and a couple of friends were out having a little trip, and the next door neighbor's kid came out, and he was playing Cowboys and Indians. You know, a little guy, and I was having a great time. So I was like, "It's a fucking Indian, brilliant!" So I was chasing him around, going pew 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 pew, and my mates were sat on the stairs outside eating their fists, going, "We're going to get arrested immediately for this." And me, by the end of it, me and my friend had very much brought the outside inside, and we'd made the living room sort of look like a garden. Got like a tramp's garden with bits of crushed beer cans on the floor and turf all over the place.
I had a lovely flat once in Edinburgh. It was probably the nicest one I'd ever stayed in. And in terms of flatmates, I had Tin and Dueb, very strong.
Friend of the
show. Ginger and Black. Yeah, or Ginger and the Black, as we called them after we heard a girl call them that in Pleasance Courtyard.
Wow.
Danny heard that and came dancing home like, "You will never guess." That was a waste of money with PR, wasn't it? Yeah. And Tom Crane and me, and it was a lovely flat, and it was a beautiful, like, place, but I contracted and passed on swine flu. And
whoa!
I was in Super Clump at the time, like our 9-person sketch group, decimated them, all gone. Came back, completely wiped out the flat, and like people crawling shakily from the bathroom back to bed. Like, thankfully, it's not like a vomiting or shitting disease, but like you're just so weak. It's like flu's biggest brother has walloped you around the face.
Jesus.
That's on me, guys. Yeah. That's on me. I'm taking full responsibility.
I like the more I think about these, the more it's less to do with the digs and more to do with my disgracefulness when in them. Because the only time I've ever had to get digs as an actor was my very, very first acting job for West Yorkshire Playhouse. And
doesn't it sound like an Alan Bennett story from ye olde times? The word digs got me there, first of all.
Yeah, I was in repertory doing that.
It was horrible when we all got swine flu.
There were no medicine back then.
Thankfully, it weren't a shitting disease. Well, it did make eating crumpets very difficult.
I was living with a woman who I thought was a character straight out of Alan Bennett, because she was this brilliant, like Yorkshire lass in her 50s, and you knew that in her 20s she was a stunner. She was like a 5'10", big bouffant on hair. It is not going all Mrs. Robinson, do not you worry.
She was putting a stocking on quite slowly, now I think about it, because it was very cold in the flat.
Yeah, and she was putting it on over her head. I'm just off out to rob the bank, me duck. But yeah, and she was great fun. And I was doing afternoon shows, because I was doing kids shows, and she said, "Oh, by the way, my friend Sandra's coming over later this afternoon. We do our Wednesday afternoon yoga." I was like, "All right, great." and I came home from the show, and I was like, "There doesn't really be much yoga going on. What's that smell?" And I went into the living room, and my host and Sandra were getting high as a kite. Wow. And it was like the two old ladies from Last of the Summer Wine were also massive stoners.
Wow.
So I spent the next of my 8 weeks getting high with Nora Batty.
And that's the title of your autobiography.
Yes, it is. But I think I'm going to have to go with classic. If it's going to be, I take a perverse pride in what my room looked like in university in second year.
I was thinking university. Second year as well is the worst, isn't it?
It really is.
First, you're making settled. A bit of an effort. Your mum's bought you bowls. You've got two bowls in case a friend comes round. And then second year, you realise nothing matters anyway. And then in third year, you get frightened.
Yeah.
Sort yourself out. But second year is... Oh, it's like the second film in Lord of the Rings. It just goes on and
it's
on.
It's a black hole.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, because my room is... My vivid memory of it is this sort of top-down Sim City view of it. And it's like in the middle of the room was this giant volcano of dirty clothes that had built up, and then going through it was a freeway made of broken CD cases going across the room, and then bits of detritus from various nights out or plays I'd been in, and at any point in my room there'd be I had a plastic early learning centre umbrella that doubled as a water pistol, some angel wings, and then fag butts and spliff ends about the floor.
Yeah, mine was like that too. I went to a posh university, and posh people, I discovered this the hard way, really into fancy dress. Oh, I was like the only person going, guys, this is really adding up. This is a lot of money, and my room would just be full of fancy dress crap, and there's no place to tidy it. Where does your wimple go? You're just like, this is pointless.
On your head while someone's pissing on you. I went to quite a posh university as well, and I lived in halls for the first year with four other guys, one of whom was a massive fan of his sort of meat and two veg dinners. Every day would have something like steak with carrots and potatoes. Always potatoes, Irish people, potatoes to every meal. About 3 months into our time there, the sink in the kitchen was beginning to flood for no apparent reason. And nobody, apart from me, seemed to take any interest in this for about a week. So I took it upon myself to examine the situation, got in under the sink, pulled the U-bend apart. It was basically stuffed with mashed potato from about a foot under the sink all the way around the U-bend and out the other side again.
That could have been a lot worse. Yeah. I was really braced for much worse than
that. It was just that every day he would empty his plate into the sink.
Do you think his mum and dad had a waste disposal unit?
Maybe,
He just scrapes it there. And
he didn't know how to operate the bin lid.
Yeah, oh my God.
Well, it's like there was a story, I think it was an American university that went round that they were asking the gentlemen students if they could refrain from relieving themselves in the shower because there had been waxy deposits building up in the plumbing system.
What were they doing? Shaking their ears out?
No. Oh, God. That's horrible.
I'm just going to make a waxy deposit. It's the least sexy porn line ever.
Yours isn't what... I mean...
Maybe waxy isn't the word for sperm.
It's probably not the word for sperm.
Platinous.
Viscous.
Viscous, yeah.
A surprising amount
potato-y.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no wonder my homemade candles don't work very well.
A surprising amount of people do that in the shower, don't they? I'd always be surprised. I'd never think the shower's very sexy.
Masturbate?
Yeah.
I mean, this is definitely going to get cut out.
But while we're on the topic,
this is definitely getting cut out, but I'm going to say it anyway. My husband and I got a note under our door asking us to not be so loud having sex in the shower when we moved into this flat. I'm now getting up on the table to get the note.
That's amazing. I'm amazed you can have sex in the shower. I've tried, slip over.
Can't do it.
It's impossible. Yeah. Oh, it's so neatly written.
It's so neatly written.
Oh,
do we know which flat it's from?
Well, now, the thing is, we live in a flat with sort of our flat is next door to another one at the end of a hall, and we share a vent, and I think a couple in the bathroom, and I think a couple of the other vents all sort of come to this one thing. So the sound, anyway.
Oh, that's a terrible coincidence.
Yeah. So the note says, unfortunately, there's no dear, and there's no sign off to this, by the way. It's
dear
unfortunately.
Shaggy Soapy Guys.
you know our band name. Unfortunately, as I'm sure you're aware, all the bathroom vents are connected and everyone can hear each other. Full stop, new paragraph. Whilst we appreciate nothing can be done about that, hyphen, we want to let you know that certain activities in the bathroom can be heard throughout our home, despite us closing all the doors.
Putting our fingers in our ears and sobbing gently.
I just wanted to bring this to your attention without causing any embarrassment for anyone. I apologise if I got the wrong apartment. You clearly knew exactly what I was. As I am trying to figure out which vent we are connected to. ...
Oh, God, the treasure hunts they've been going on. Like,
yeah, they've had stethoscopes against the walls.
Oh, he's finished. I didn't find him.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that's so getting cut out.
I hope it doesn't. That's amazing.
Me too.
So are you suggesting that living with you in university in second year is the worst lodgings anyone could have had?
I'm sure there are maybe worse humans to have lived with, but... My room, when you opened it, you would get quite the unique fog, followed by no real idea of where was safe and not safe to place your feet, and then a pit of a bed.
Lovely. Sounds charming.
Yeah, it really was. And I wonder why I wasn't bringing home the ladies.
Well, they were getting lost. Then,
yeah. this is why I suggested it, because I have had such a collection of like terrible, terrible flats. Like at university, obviously awful. We had a mattress in the living room that I found in a skip on the way home from the pub, and I thought would double as a second sofa. But obviously it didn't. It just made the whole room look like Trainspotting. And yeah, the whole flat, like there were 9 of us living in it. So of course there was that awful feeling of like, well, shared responsibility. Like, what's the point in washing up? Because like 8 other people are going to make it dirty. So everyone thought that. So we had maggots a couple of times. Ooh. Someone had maggots in their shoes. And I mean, they weren't worn very often, but still, I don't know how that happened.
Would they act as a really effective, like,
odor eater?
Yeah, odor eater.
Like those fish that nibbled the dry skin.
Yeah.
These maggots didn't seem cooperative. but then, yeah, we had one night, we had a load of people around and we were playing a drinking game with Roxanne and Turn on the Red Light, and you drink on one, drink on the other. And obviously by like the second chorus, my friend gave a little burp and sicked across the whole room and it hit everyone except me. I'm terrified of vomit. So I was freaking out and like legged it and stood in the back garden shivering like, so cold. So
were you like Neo in the Matrix bending around the vomit?
I was. Everyone got hit except me. I was like, no. And yeah, and it hit a load of crockery and he still didn't wash up that crockery. And like then everyone put it in a little bucket outside his bedroom. Like, this is really your responsibility to clean this. You didn't, so they put it in his bed. He slept on top of it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the level of grotty we're operating
at. That's incredible.
That already defeats anything I had going on.
Thank you very much. Proud of self. And then I moved into London, and like, I don't know if you've had the experience of like, you move into London and then bit by bit, London ejects you from its centre. You can't afford zone 1.
Yeah.
You can't afford zone 2. And it just keeps like pushing you and pushing you out like a body rejecting a foreign object.
And then suddenly you're in a zone that's made up of Cyrillic letters.
Yeah. My time travelled. I'm actually very lucky. I'm in like a really nice flat now in zone 2. But I'm really aware that if I wanted to buy a place, it would be much less nice than this place.
Yeah.
So I feel a little bit caught. I'm just going to sit tight.
It's true.
But I think probably the worst one I had in London was in Muswell Hill, which is lovely.
Nice
and
area.
It's a really beautiful area. And but somebody years ago had, I mean, it looks like they built it with their cousin. They'd done a little granny flat on the side of their beautiful house. And got the impression granny had died.
Yeah.
And then they moved some people in. And so me, Tin and Dueb again, because he didn't learn his lesson, and Tom Craig again, didn't learn his lesson, all moved into this flat. And because it was made for a little old person, like everything was too small. Like the toilet was too low, the bath was too little, the shower was just like you'd get your waist done, but like everything above your waist was just a whole other problem to deal with. And we all got a bit wheezy in that flat. We didn't know why, but we were drinking a lot, so we thought it was that. And then one day, I was just making the bed, and I pulled the bed away from the wall, and the wall was black with mould.
Oh.
And so we'd all been breathing in very toxic mould for about 9 months.
Christ.
And ended up, like, everyone sort of camping in the living room for about 6 months.
That sounds fun.
So, yeah. So I think that has been my worst place by a long shot.
And when it's that small and you've got 3 of you crammed into it as well, it's made me think of, have you heard of the Kowloon Walled City? So it's an area of Hong Kong, which used to be a Chinese fort. And when the Chinese left, it became like a little enclave within Hong Kong. China still claimed that bit of it because it was a Chinese fort, but it was basically surrounded by British territory being Hong Kong. And a load of Chinese refugees arrived there during the Chinese Civil War and after World War II, and just basically built up this place into like, the buildings got higher and higher. They had these basically apartment buildings stuck onto the edge of the fort and 10, 12 stories high. It's like someone's like kept, like someone had loads of different pieces of Lego kits building on top and on top of each other. And it's, I think it's 6.5 acres in size. And by the 80s, 33,000 people lived in those 6.5 acres in 350 buildings. It was its population density was 3.25 million people per square mile. The most populous city in the world today is Manila, with about 110,000 people per square mile. The most populous place in the world is the slums of Mumbai and Dharavi, which are 777,000 people per square mile.
God.
This was 3.25 million crammed
That's
into
insane.
This. Yeah, and it was like basically lawless. The authorities didn't go in there. It was run by the triads. It was prostitution, gambling, drug abuse.
Someone's really up the bloody ante, hasn't
he? Yeah, you really are. Well, I didn't...
I'm like, it was chilly. Like,
I didn't tell you about the bordello that I ran out from under my bed.
It was so cramped and the alleys were so narrow and the building so high that they had like fluorescent lamps lighting some of the alleyways because the sunlight couldn't reach the ground. It was like Coruscant.
Oh my God. I went to Montenegro a couple of months ago and there's a walled city of Kotor there that like, it's a little bit like that, but it's not too built up, but definitely you do find yourself outside, but you suddenly realise, why am I outside? But you feel like you're in a shopping centre because like, you don't see the sky.
Yeah, this place you could go from one end of it to the other without touching the ground because the roofs were so close together and there were staircases and balconies and things.
Oh, that makes me feel quite panicked. This will make you feel terrible. So the walled city of Kotor, amazing person off my own heart living there, had a load of cats, which bred. So the walled city of Kotor is full of cats.
All related to each other.
They all look a bit similar. And they just wander in and out of shops as they like, and you just have to feed them and like take care of them. And you would be dead. The moment you'd be swelling like some sort of slug.
They'd close the gates in the walled city, Vandervel trapped with hundreds of cats.
Yeah, that's like Indiana Jones and snakes.
Yeah, going up under the roof, the cats are piling up on below the roof, getting higher and higher.
That would be a really motivated crystal mason.
Yes.
Now, Peanut World, come on.
It's quite nice now. The Kowloon Walled City, it's been knocked down. They've turned it into a park.
It's quite nice. They've destroyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I did read that when the gambling and the drug taking, the opium dens, led to raids in the 70s. So the living conditions improved a bit after these raids. But in 73, 74, they arrested 2,500 people there and seized 4,000 pounds of drugs.
In terms of weight or... value.
Weight.
Yeah. Okay, right.
4,000 pounds of drugs.
Yeah, because me and Ben were like, in terms of value, that's a weekend, mate. It's a ledge.
That's made it sound great all of a sudden. Yeah. Great. So your suggestion is your flat in Muswell Hill.
I think that one was the worst, yeah.
You and me have got very low opinions of our former dwellings, don't we?
Yeah, well.
And of you as flatmates.
But that's it. I was quite a bad flatmate. But that's the thing, though, with being a comedian, is that like when the estate agent says, what can you afford? You're like, well, this month I can afford this, but next month it could be double, it could be nothing, it could be like, whenever my parents are like, you should budget, I have no idea what's happening one day to the next financially. Like, no idea at all.
If you're listening, HMRC, we can't estimate our earnings for next year based on this year.
Guess how long a smile is on a dog in, you know, Mumbai. I don't know. I don't. This is madness.
Your tax returns sound really complicated.
Yeah, and very avant-garde.
They're just drawings.
I've looked into the Marshalsea Prison, debtors' prisons generally in Victorian times.
I was at Charles Dickens' house only yesterday.
Wait, yeah.
Yes, I was. Saturday. And that's where his father was imprisoned for debt.
Yes, he was. Yeah, in 1824. Yeah, he was there for 3 months. He owed the equivalent of about 3,500 quid to a baker.
Wow.
That's a lot of baps.
Good grief.
But prisons back in basically until the 19th century, prison wasn't really considered a punishment itself. You'd be either in prison awaiting trial or awaiting execution, unless it was for something like drunkenness or vagrancy where they chuck you in a prison for a couple of days. It wasn't really a punishment itself.
Right.
Over half of the people in prisons in Britain in the late 18th century were there for debt. You'd enter a prison to basically protect yourself from your debtors, your creditors rather. You'd go and try and exit the prison during the day and work and try and make the money to pay back your debt.
Right.
And they were they were run for profit. You're listening, America. The prisons were, they'd be owned by the government, but then by government figures like the Knight Marshal, which Marshalsea was owned by, who would basically let it to other people to run for profit. So they'd run shops out of it. You were charged to be in prison. You have to pay an entry fee called garnish to enter the Marshalsea, which would basically allow you the use of the snuggery where they served food. Bonus was you got as much free beer as you liked.
Right.
Which
it
is
was
great.
Very weak back then, though. Yeah, wasn't it? It's a bit wormy.
But it's all you need for prisoners.
Yeah,
Dickens' dad was there, and little Dorrit is born in the Marshalsea in that book, because her father is in there for a debt that is so complicated they can't figure out how to pay it off. That's the sort of the idea, is that the debt would pile, because obviously you'd owe money to the prison, and then you'd owe money to your debtors and interest, and it would all sort of pile up.
And that's like a common theme in Dickens' work, just being sort of caught up in this weird Kafka-esque.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With the Bleak House is the one with the Jarndyce versus Jarndyce, isn't it?
Yes, that's Bleak House. There's a quote from Bleak House, like in Charles Dickens' house, and I took a photo of it because it just seemed like, oh my god, I can relate to that. But it says, "Keep out of Chancery. It's being ground to bits in a slow mill. It's being roasted at a slow fire. It's being stung to death by single bees. It's being drowned by drops. It's going mad by grains."
Wow.
Like, oh my god, that is so powerful. Yeah. Unfortunately, I can empathize with that massively.
They had a committee into jails in 1729, which looked into the Marshalsea and other places, and they found that 300 inmates had starved in a three-month period in the Marshalsea. Some of the people who were imprisoned there was a trumpeter for Handel, who wrote a diary about his time there, so that's a great source for knowing about the Marshalsea. And Ben Jonson was imprisoned there in the late 16th century for his play The Isle of Dogs, which is a lost play, which was apparently so scandalous it was immediately suppressed and he was thrown into prison for a little while.
Oh, wow.
And Dickens' father as well.
The other bleak things, lodgings in Dickensian times, I think it's probably almshouses. And I remember reading about if you were a vagrant or you were a single parent or you were an orphan or whatever, you'd go in there and it would be 100 people packed in a tiny room. And there were no beds. Instead, there was just a rope from one end of the room to another. In order to sleep, you just draped yourself over the rope.
Oh, my God.
So it's like people were hung up like dirty washing across a room.
Yeah, it's a completely smaller space to get as many people in as possible, I guess.
Who on earth thought of that? Who was like, your people look like, they look like clothes, but a bit let's have them sleep like clothes.
Well, people Victorians are in it.
Yeah,
pretty much. All we are is clothes occupied by meat.
Yeah. Salvador Dali retired to his own museum.
Well, the one in Figueres.
Yeah, the one in Figueres in Catalonia, rather. Because in 1980, he got palsy, or he became so palsied that the shake in his hand meant he wasn't able to hold a brush anymore. So he wasn't able to work.
Man, I didn't know that.
Yeah, for the last 10 years or so of his life, he couldn't work. He was then injured in a fire and suffered burns. And so I imagine living in a museum surrounded by your own work, unable to do any more, must have been torturous.
And also, like, makes him sound like a Dickensian villain.
Yeah, he lived in the tower of his own museum. That's
of
even more.
Of course he did.
Poked his head down every now and again and corrected the tour guide. That's not accurate.
Yeah, then again, the tower was a swirling, melting mass. Yeah.
God, can you imagine living in a tower where you've just got your own DVDs on all that day after day?
A lot of these are sort of involuntarily bad in a way, and I wanted to find somewhere that was basically a lodging that people chose to live in and yet was awful. And look no further than religious people, guys.
Oh. Who'd be mad enough to...
Ben and I started, when we were talking about this, we mentioned Diogenes to each other, who famously was a Greek philosopher who lived in a barrel or a wine vat. For most of his life in Athens, and he was a cynic, was his thing. His thing was that there were no good people. Good was quite hard to find in the world, so he'd wander around carrying a lamp in daylight, going, "I'm looking for an honest man. I can't seem to find one."
Oh my god, it sounds like The Fringe.
Yeah.
He was 45.
Yeah.
Three venues.
Just like a performance artist.
Yeah. When Alexander the Great apparently met him. And when Alexander the Great met him, he said, can I do any favours, Diogenes? He said, yes, get out of my sunlight. Or, alternate story, Alexander the Great met him and Diogenes was looking through some bones. And he said, what are you doing? He said, I'm looking for your father's bones, but cannot distinguish them from those of a slave. Which basically sounds like he was a Twitter troll the day.
Isn't there, I'm sure there's another story of Diogenes where I think, again, Alexander the Great comes up and goes, you know, you're a well-respected philosopher, can I get you anything? And he says, well, a bigger barrel would be nice.
Yeah, that's probably true. That sounds like the sort of, it just sounds like a dick. So Diogenes syndrome is basically living with Ben. Diogenes syndrome is when you neglect yourself and you start hoarding stuff.
Hey!
It mainly affects the elderly as well. So
if we're going to talk about hoarding, we do need an honourable mention for your husband. Yeah, this is true. His old, so he had a separate room. And my room will occasionally be tidy, but Mikey's room can become a nest. we brought another flatmate in to try and mediate. That's not true. But we brought her in, and she was quite OCD, and she tidied Mikey's room while he was out because its presence offended her so much, and she found a dead mouse.
Oh god.
In amongst all the layers.
The love of my life.
Keeping a dead mouse. Yeah. Maybe he was gonna bring it back to life.
That's why we have to have sex in the shower. We don't let him make a mess anywhere else.
Hose him
down. I have to keep him. Well, now I've made sure we have to keep that in.
Your sex life is a continuity nightmare.
Tell me about it.
Well, you make it sound like they finish before they start.
No, we have someone watching. We have someone watching us at all times to make sure we take up where we left off.
Weren't you holding something in that previous
Ben will know one of my favourite things in the world is popes, yep. Generally. And Pope Celestine V, who is one of my absolute favourites, the previous pope died, Nicholas IV, in 1292. It took 27 months for the 12 cardinals to choose his successor. So it was like two years and a bit before they had the next pope.
The world
pope.
Must have been in turmoil without a pope.
I think they were probably really...
The popes are so old, though. They're like, if you're going to faff about that long, you're like, a 98-year-old pope.
Well, they chose a guy who was about 80 called Pietro del Morone, who was a hermit who had basically lived in a cave in the mountains south of Rome for about half a century, fasting every single day.
Sounds like a right barrel of laughs.
Because they'd had a bit of a bad run of corrupt popes. And they thought, we want someone who's a holy man that people respect. The cardinals went to find him, to drag him on a donkey back to Rome for his coronation, to find that Charles II of Naples was already there, basically in his ear going, you're going to look after me, aren't you? And so when they crowned Celestine, he basically gave out favours to everyone that Charles told him to give favours to, like promoted all the members of his family. He would avoid talking to the cardinals, or if he had to talk to them, would tell them, please speak Italian, I can't speak Latin. and then he lived in a little wooden cell in Charles II's palace in Naples. And the guy who wanted to be the next pope, Cardinal Benedetto Seitani, who became his successor, Boniface VIII, inserted a tube into the cell and stood outside talking into the tube saying, Celestine, I am the voice of God. You will go to hell if you do not resign the papacy. You must return to your ascetic life in the mountains.
What is this Wile E. Coyote plan that he's got going
it
on?
It worked. He just basically said, I'm resigning, and went back to his cave. But yeah, it's that sad ending for him. He went back to his cave where he wanted to live all his life, but Pope Boniface VIII thought he could lead a rebellion, as if this guy who definitely didn't want to be pope would lead a rebellion and try and seize the job back. So he sort of seized him, chucked him in prison, and he died in prison about a year later.
Arguably, is prison so different from a cave?
I think he was probably quite happy there.
But then there's
other people there who actually really fucked him up.
Caves are one thing. My suggestion for the world's worst lodgings are the lodgings of St. Simeon Stylites the Elder.
Okay.
Do you know who Simeon Stylites is?
I know the younger.
Yeah. Simeon was a Turk. He entered a monastery at the age of 16, but was so zealous in his sort of austerity that he was asked to leave because he just didn't fit into a monastery community. This is in he was born in 390, died in 459 AD. After he lived in the monastery, he went to live in a hut for a year and a half, where once he fasted for the entirety of Lent, and emerged to great acclaim that he'd survived the entire Lent period.
Biscuit crumbs everywhere.
Yeah.
It was like David Blaine in his glass box, but, you know, with walls. No one could see him.
Yeah, and there weren't people there throwing golf balls next to him all the time.
And then he's like, no, this hut is too fancy. He moved to a rocky outcrop. But crowds, sort of drawn to him by his sort of holiness and this fasting legend that had grown up around him, would keep coming to him asking for advice and prayers and counsel. So he's like, fuck this. And he moved to some ruins near Aleppo in Syria. God knows there's still a lot of them around. Where he found a pillar. And he built himself a platform on top of this pillar about 10 foot above the ground. Where he lived for the remaining 47 years of his life. So this pillar was 10 foot high. Later he moved to a taller one, which is apparently 20 foot high. Some
right,
people say it got as high.
Right, because 10 foot was too comfy.
Too close to the ground still. People were still coming and shouting at it.
Isn't that like a little bit egotistical? Because really, that's not a lodging. You're turning yourself into a statue.
Well, a couple of priests came to sort of say, is this pride or is this humility? And so they came to him to say...
A priest to come and give you the hard truth.
Yeah. Well, they came to him going, Simon Stylites, come down to us, thinking, well, if he doesn't, he's probably just being proud. But he instantly said, no, your elders in the church, I will immediately come down to you. And they were like, oh, no, it's fine. Actually, stay there. It's fine. We believe you now.
He was
halfway down
shimmying. Oh, fuck's sake, shimmy back
up
again.
Then he got back up again. He went, oh, no, actually do come down. What boys would clamber up the column to give him, deliver sort of bread and milk for food.
And he'd shit off the edge.
Yeah.
I mean, That's definitely how he did it.
Nuns came below him and he would piss on top of them.
Quickly, bring me nuns, my bladder is full.
The only thing he had on top of it was like a pole, which he would strap himself to stay upright during a Lent as sort of an extra punishment to himself.
How did he not fall off when he fell asleep?
God, I think I must have been quite a wide
platform. Draped himself over a bit of
rope. But it was basically his way of going, I need a bit of space, guys.
It's such a visible way of wanting space, though, because you could just hide yourself and have all the space in the world. Whereas when you put yourself on top of a bloody big pillar, then, well, everyone can see you for miles around.
Miles away, yeah.
It's biblical virtue signalling.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
Thank you, finally someone said it.
My favourite thing about him is he died stooped over in prayer, which basically meant with his arse in the air. There's accounts of him praying, and the majority of the time he would just go from upright to bow, upright, bow, just thousands of times. And so mid-bow...
He's basically
ready to be entered by God.
This is why your husband keeps dead mice. You set your own standards.
So, our candidates for the worst lodgings are Ben Vandevelde's flat in the second year of university. That learned same as Muswell Hill granny flat. Or Simeon Steelites' pillar. I mean, your flat now looks lovely. It's quite...
I should bloody think so. He's an adult now.
Yeah.
Well,
don't praise him for that. He's, you know...
More importantly, I've had some artistic input, but we all know the reason why my flat looks lovely now.
You're good,
your
wife.
Your mum has come to live.
The Muswell Hill flat sounds cosy, but dangerous and toxic.
Yes. Whereas Watsit's old pillar wasn't even cosy.
Yeah, it wasn't even dangerous. I think I'm going to be selfish. I think I'm going to pick Simeon Stylites' pillar as the worst lodging in the world, partly because it just sounds dreadfully uncomfortable, but partly also because 47 years of it.
Yeah, I was only there 18 months.
Yeah.
Must be honest.
Yeah.
I can deal with that.
And it's it's in Aleppo now. The ruins are still there. The pillar is basically just like a stump in the ground with a little rock on top of it to know this was the one he sat on the whole time. So it's what he would have wanted, I'm sure. Not a showy statue,
don't
just
look
a
at
rock.
My pillar. Don't look at it. I don't even like it.
Is he like one of those people who goes, no, I'm shy. No, don't look at me, but do look at me. I'm on my pillar. Don't look at me. I'm shy.
I've forgotten about that. When I was younger, that was such a thing. When like girls in particular be like, oh, God, I'm so shy. I'm just so insecure and shy. So tell me I shouldn't be.
He is the most coquettish hermit ever.
Yeah, yes. Really is. Yeah.
So, yes. It's my cave now, guys. All by myself.
Well, no. Well done, Simeon Stylites. He's wanted all these years.
Yeah.
Forget the sainthood. This is the big one.
What does he win for winning this? Because I'm voting for him too.
Some bread and milk.
This is how you rack up $4,000 a day at a baker's.
Yeah. Before we go, I have some of the worst news of the week, which comes courtesy of Reuters. And it involves President Fart of USA, to give him his real name rather than his slave name. Trump went to a heroes and villains party of a campaign donor called Robert Mercer in Long Island this weekend. On his way in, he was spotted wearing a blue and white check tie and a suit. And so naturally the press shouted out, wanting to know which hero or villain he had gone as. And he replied, me. Which shows a stunning lack of self-awareness.
Or an incredible amount of self-awareness.
Yeah. God, that's the one thing that's put me, like, even slightly off my opinion of him. It's just like, God, what do you think he knows? He's an absolute cock.
Yeah. He didn't live in your flat and didn't have all the fancy dress up stuff from university.
Yeah, clearly not. I could have sorted him out with like a sexy cat outfit or something.
Nobody wants to see that.
Well, that's it's a tricky thing.
Grab me by the me. Before we go, Nat, where can people find out more about you and your work?
Oh, just come along on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I'm Nat Lertzema. In fact, although I don't Google myself, I have been reliably informed.
Not in the shower, anyway.
I've been reliably informed. If you just type in Nat and then L U U, It's me. It's always me. No one else has that ridiculous accumulation of vowels. So you could just do that and then something will pop up.
Excellent. Good to hear. Well, we are all off to go build ourselves a barrel and get cozy with each other. maybe with some passing nuns. In the meantime, thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Start the shower, Barry. After an hour talking about the most disgusting places in the world, it's nice to be back in your beautiful flat.
My husband and the dead mice have been kicked out.
It does, yeah, that does feel like I've just gone on a horrible Matrix trip down into memory lane. And I'm really glad for both me and Nat that neither of our dwellings were picked and we went for that weirdo hermit.
Yeah, I think he's probably delighted wherever he is. But this is bigger than the sainthood.
Yeah,
this is the big one, guys. If you liked Nat, she is always developing films and books and all sorts of things. I think she's doing some more stand-up again now as well. Find out what she's up to. Go to her website, natlertsema.com. Just start type in Nat, L, and several U's, and Google will auto-correct and auto-finish it for you, and you'll find your way there.
Once you've finished researching the multi-talented Natlertsema, it's time to do your duty as a listener of this podcast. Hopefully you're a new listener, in which case, welcome. We have a tradition for new listeners, which is that they record their own podcast talking about how much Jesus means to them. And then we will play it at the start. No, not really.
Haze them! Haze them!
Freshman. What we would love you to do is to pop onto your podcast platform of choice, give us a review. 5 stars would be ideal. 4 stars and you're dead to us. We send out 3 stars, we send out a hit squad. Review us, and it helps us pop up the charts and get more listeners. If you are a regular listener and have not done this already, shame on you.
Shame.
So please rectify that immediately. If you want to contact us, where can they do this, Barry?
They can do it in the places I say every week. We're on Twitter at Worst Foot. We're on Facebook if you just look for Worst Foot Forward. And you can send us an email, worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com, if you have any suggestions of topics or guests or just general banter and abuse would be lovely. You can also personalise that if you find us on Twitter. I'm at BazMaxStay and Ben is on at BenVandeveld.
Also,
Ben has something to plug, guys. Strap in. It's going to be a big one. We're in June, so Edinburgh Festival is coming up, and Ben needs as many of you to come to his gigs as possible. So please do that. I'm talking continuously to fill this period of silence while Ben looks hastily through emails for gigs that are, while we're recording this, still 6 weeks away.
That was shambolic. This week, I am going to the Hastings Fringe. Do you know what? I don't know if we've got any listeners on the South Coast. Here's hoping. If we do, come along. On the 14th of June at 8:45, I will be in Ye Olde Pump House. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I said that I was doing the last ever performance of Barbarians. I was full of shit. I'm doing it here on the 14th. So that's me doing old, tried and tested good stuff. And then on Sunday, the 18th of June, from 4 o'clock till 5 o'clock, I'm on at the Comedy Shack, also in Hastings on George Street, where I'll be running through my new show, Sidekick, which you'd have thought by now would be getting all right. Come and find out.
Yeah, I don't have anything to plug. I'm still doing the Crystal Maze. Come and book tickets for that. Go to crystalmaze.com for tickets. And you might get me, or you might get one of 30 other very talented hosts.
Yeah, some of whom have been guests on this podcast.
Indeed. Our guest next week is the lovely Christian Talbot, who is he's from my own country, first of all, another Irish. And we talk about the world's worst film actors. We had to restrict it just to male actors for next week, because there was such a wide choice. We didn't even get to Carmen Electra.
Yeah.